Sermon text today comes from Mark chapter 3, verses 7 through 19. It says, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. For he had healed many, so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. And he went up to the mountain, and he called to him those whom he desired. And they came to him, and he appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they might be with him, and he might send them out to preach, and have authority to cast out demons. He appointed the 12, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name I don't know how to pronounce, that is, the sons of thunder, Andrew and Philip and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas and James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus and Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. This is the word of the Lord. Welcome to Christ Church, Kingwood. My name is Jeremy. I'm one of the elders and pastors here. Patrick is out. Patrick and Cheryl are out today. But we are here in Mark 3, continuing through our Mark series, journeying to the cross, on our way to see Jesus, pulling him out in the scriptures, seeing who he is as he is revealed through this gospel. And today in chapter 3, Mark starts to paint a little bit different picture to us. As the previous chapter, we saw all these encounters and engagements with all the Pharisees, and we saw this tension being built and this conflict being built to the point that the last section that we read, that they started plotting to destroy him. And so like I would say normal human being, but most normal human beings, you know, when conflict arises and you hear about a plot to destroy your life, you kind of want to get away. It's kind of reminding me of those, like, Southwest Airlines, like, you want to get away? He has this interaction. He's like, all right, guys, he calls his disciples, and it says that they, where else would you get away to but the sunny, beautiful beach, right? So they get away to the sea. It says that they withdrew to the sea. And so you have Jesus, conflict, they want to destroy him. He's like, hey, guys, let's head to the beach. So they're headed to the sea. Now, I'm starting to form a habit here when I preach, but I want to ask for another show of hands. It's not incriminating, don't worry. But how many of you, and be honest with yourselves, feel like life is full of pressure? Pressure in life. I'm going to ask again, be honest. Raise your hands and hold them up, and I want everybody to look around for a moment. You feel like life is full of pressure? Yeah. A lot of people in here. So we're all kind of in the same boat here. So pressures come in all shapes and sizes. Pressures from your spouse. Pressures from your children. Pressures from your boss. Pressures to be a certain thing. To do a certain thing. Pressure to produce. Maybe when you don't feel like you can. Pressure to act a certain way. To say a certain thing. Right? Children, you may feel pressure from your parents, pressure from your teachers. Pressures come in all shapes and sizes. Life is full of pressure. And our text this morning, I think it really shows us the humanity of Jesus. And it shows us the reality that Jesus knows what pressure is like. He understands pressure. Life pressures. When things are pressed up against us. In Hebrews 4:15, he's able to sympathize with our weakness. So I love it because it kind of shows us this humanity of Jesus. So you had the previous chapter of these interactions with the Pharisees. You have the Pharisees putting pressure on Jesus to be a certain type of religious leader. Right? He's supposed to do certain things. He's supposed to obey the law a certain way or say certain things. So he's getting pressure from the religious leaders to be a certain way. Even to the point that they look at him and they're like, now we need to destroy this man because he's not being what we want him to be. So to know that, pressure to be something leading you to your destruction. Adds even more pressure. So now he's got the pressure of his own life being at risk, right? And so today we see in our section, this first section, 7 through 12, kind of adds another layer to pressure. And it's not just pressure from the religious leaders. Now we have, in this attempt to escape with his disciples to the seaside, we have a whole bunch of people coming to him. We have a bunch of people that are actually, if you look at that verse, verse 10, it says that they pressed around him to touch him. That word pressed actually means to fall upon, literally to fall upon. They pressed, they wanted to fall upon him. So there was literal physical pressure. Crowds of people coming from all around, coming to Jesus, wanting to touch him, wanting to fall upon him. Thousands of people. So not only as he escapes the religious pressures and he gets to the seaside with his disciples, he just has a horde, a mass of actual human beings wanting to press against him for healing, for deliverance. You ever felt like that? No matter where you go, you can't escape people, parents, kids of younger siblings. You feel like no matter where you go in the house, they're always just following you around. Like in that moment where you think you tricked them just enough that you went around one way and they went, and then you actually went around the other way and you went upstairs and got into your closet. And like, now I can actually change clothes in private. And there's like these little eyes like peeking through the little crack in the door. You're like, oh my gosh, there's a pressure. I can't get away from you. And Jesus is like, hey, I want to go to the seaside and I can't get away from you. People came for miles. It says they came all the way from Tyre and Sidon in Jerusalem, which was about 85 miles away from Capernaum, if that's the area that they were in. So we're potentially hundreds of miles these people have walked to come and see this Jesus that was doing all of these things. So what do you think? Before I ask that, look at what he was doing, right? So they hear about what Jesus is doing is what it says. They heard all that he was doing, so they came to him. So word's getting out about this guy Jesus that's doing this stuff. And the stuff that he's doing is casting out demons and healing sick people. So they're hearing about this guy that if you just touch him, you can be healed. So man, they're coming. They're not only coming to watch, they're coming because they want to actually experience. So, which is interesting because according to Mark 1, 14 and 15 and then verse 38, the purpose of Jesus, what he said, I am here to preach the gospel, to proclaim the kingdom. Right? That was his primary mission. It says in chapter 1, verse 30, my primary mission is to proclaim. So his primary mission was this proclamation of word. So these people weren't coming to hear about what he was saying. They came to experience what he was doing. They wanted something from him. So now my question, what do we know about needy people, people that are in need of something, that travel a really long way to get it? We could probably deduce that they may be a little demanding, maybe a little entitled, and most likely they're not going to be denied. Right? If you knew about something that you wanted immensely, and you traveled hundreds, and in our context, probably like potentially thousands of miles to get that one thing you wanted, and you got there, are you going to let anything stop you from getting it? It's kind of like that movie Vacation with Chevy Chase, and he gets to Wally World, and it's shut down. He's like, are you serious? He punches the thing, and he's like, anyway. You're not going to be denied. You ever experienced that? Like, traveled somewhere, and it just wasn't there. Your favorite store, or that one item you wanted to buy, and someone else snagged it right before you got there. How'd you feel, right? So that feeling and that response usually is only magnified when we're in crowds that kind of want the same thing. You ever been to a concert or like a sporting event where there's just a mass of people, and like when things start getting excited, like, yeah, we want it, start, they're cheering and they're singing a song and they're jumping. Like, even the most self-controlled human beings, like, it's, you got to fight against wanting to do what the crowd's doing, right? So you kind of get sucked into, so we have a mob, a crowd that's sitting here saying, we've got to touch Jesus. We've got to get that thing we wanted. Hundreds and potentially thousands of people wanting to touch Jesus all at the same time. You get sucked into that. Well, I got to touch him too. I got to touch him too. Push, 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 push. Like Mark paints this incredible picture of chaos here. And I don't know about you, but if I was Jesus in that space, see, we think, oh, Jesus is God. Jesus is God. He just does what he wants. He just kind of tiptoes around and bounces, right? And he's kind of elusive. But Jesus was fully human. And we forget often that Jesus felt the emotion of it all. His humanness felt the emotion. I mean, it wasn't like, oh yeah, there's some bunch of people and I'm... No, that pressure was coming against him. I would be freaked out with thousands of people wanting to touch me. Like, I get into a public transportation, you know, like on the bus or the sub or train, if y'all have ever done that, and there's just like, and you're like, excuse me, and I'm trying to hold on to the thing and move around as people. I'm like, get me off that thing. I'd rather walk around the city of Vancouver with a backpack on my back than ride on all that stuff. So what does Jesus do? I love this. It's humanity right here, full display. He says, hey, fellas, get the car and start it and have it sitting outside just in case. That's my translation. Verse 9, he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. He's like, hey, there's a potential here that I may lose my life. So get the car running. Right? That sounds a bit crazy. And Mark's painting a really, if we really think about this image here, he's painting a very chaotic picture of people wanting to touch Jesus and get healed. This isn't your normal evangelical healing service where everybody lines up orderly in the front row, you know, and then you have the pastor going down, laying hands and healing people. It's not that. This is chaos to the point that he may need a boat to get away from everybody. A mob of desperate people who won't be denied that thing they want. And that put pressure on Jesus' very life, his physical life. And if you think about it for a moment, Mark paints us a picture here of a mass of people who have absolutely no respect for Jesus' privacy. Right? He wanted to get away to the seaside, and the crowd just follows him. Hey, where he is, we're going to be there. No respect for his privacy. And absolutely no concern for his life. They cared more about their own healing and deliverance than they did for the life of the one who had the power to heal them. They cared more about their own personal healing and deliverance than they did about the very one who could heal them. How selfish is that? Solely focused on self, getting sucked into the mob, the crowd, wanting to touch Jesus so bad that they were willing to put his life at risk and potentially the lives of people around them. Unfortunately, this reality is common throughout, this image is common throughout history, this mass of people that people ended up getting crushed under. You can go do a Google search. Happens more often than you might think. Back in 2005 in India, 42 people were killed in a mob rush as flood supplies, relief supplies were handed out to refugees. The one thing they wanted so bad, they rushed and people died. Or maybe you remember this. 2008, a Walmart worker died in a stampede of people trying to get into Walmart on Black Friday. That's crazy. But that's reality. I want that thing so bad that I have no concern for anybody else but me. I won't be denied. Give me what I want. That's why these people came to Jesus. That's the pressure Jesus was feeling. And the crazy thing is, he cared. Right? He actually cared. He didn't just write them off. He didn't command them to go away. He continued to heal them. He continued to cast out the demons. He continued to show empathy and love and compassion upon them, even as they're pushing up against him and jostling and all this madness is going on. And even as the demons are falling down at his feet and saying, "You're the Son of God," which in a sense is another attempt to pressure him, saying, "We're going to control the narrative here." And he says, "No." He says, "No, you're not going to go tell people that I'm the Son of God because I'm in control here." So he has pressure from religious folks to be a certain way religiously. He has pressure from the crowd to give them something that they want. And he has pressure from the demonic spiritual forces to do things the way they want. There's a lot of pressure. All of that to say, Jesus feels pressure and he knows it. And we have a lot of pressure in our lives. Majority of you raised your hands. You know what life pressure is like. Jesus knows it too. So what did he do? Verse 13. This is where Mark shifts gears and he starts to paint another little picture for us here. In verse 13 it says, "And he went up on the mountain and he called to him those whom he desired and they came to him." So Jesus goes up to the mountain. He goes into the hills. He escapes the crowd. You know what? Maybe the beach wasn't the best getaway. Let's go to the mountains instead. Let's get a little bit of that fresh air. But look at what, so we have this, Mark says, hey, he leaves and he goes up to the mountain with his disciples. But look at the way Luke chapter 6, verse 12 paints the same picture for us. He actually, he paints a little bit different picture, but it's the same time. It says, "In these days he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples." So Luke gives us a little bit twist, a little bit more detail to the story. Mark paints a chaotic picture of pressure being put upon Jesus and a mass of people and these healings and demonic stuff going on. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's go to the mountain with my disciples. But Luke says, hey, look, actually, he went alone and he prayed all night long and then he called his disciples. In our pressure-filled lives, pressure to be and to do and to act a certain way, pressure from regular demands, from jobs, from spouses, from children, from the details of life, combined with the pressure as believers, as Christians, to want to live a certain way and to have empathy and compassion on others and embrace others and be hospitable and be loving and be kind, and all of these pressures we feel, when they start to overwhelm us, what do you think we need most? What do you think it is our lives need most in that moment? To step away and to pray. To pray. a space alone with God. I know we don't have a bunch of mountains around here to escape to. See, Jesus didn't just break away from the beach and go to the mountains with his crew to have a better vacation away from people. Like, he broke away to go pray in the pressures of life. And I know there's lots of excuses with time and all of that, and we don't have mountains. But you have space in your life. I'm going to say it again. You have space in your life to pray. To talk to God. Jesus goes to talk to his Father, to renew his own soul, to find a reprieve, a respite from the pressures of life. To be alone. It's okay to lock your closet and tell your children you cannot come in for an hour. If there's another adult in the house. See, the space that Mark paints this image here, the uses of the mountain image, it's an important image throughout all the scriptures. This idea of the mountain, right? Mountains are all through the scriptures. And Mark uses actually a mountain imagery a couple more times in his gospel, in chapter 6 and in chapter 9. In both of these images, the mountain is a place to go meet with God, to pray, and it's a place to go meet with God and be transformed, right? The transfiguration. So you kind of have these two images. The mountain is a place to be with God and to be transformed by God. You even have Moses goes up to the mountain, Mount Sinai, meets with God. So this mountain imagery, the place to get up and meet with God, is all through scriptures. But I'm going to look at these two verses in Isaiah, or these two passages in Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 2 and 3. This is a prophecy of Isaiah years, years, years before Mark here. And it says, "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be lifted up above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it. And many people shall come and say, 'Come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths.'" And then Isaiah 20:25. "On this mountain," the mountain he was just prophesying about back in chapter 2, "on this mountain the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, aged wine and well-refined, and he will swallow up on this mountain the covering that is cast over all peoples, and the veil that is spread over the nations. He will swallow up death forever. And the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces, and the reproach of his people he will take away from all the earth, for the Lord has spoken." Now, I don't have any of these up there, but as I was reading this, you can go through, and there's, like, I put little notes here with all these little New Testament verses that just jump out all over this. This Advent season, we're celebrating and remembering the birth of Jesus, the Savior, the one who was born, as we just read, or just sang, born to be lifted up above all and to draw others to himself. Born that men may no more may die. Right? John 12:32, "And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." We just read about a mountain over here in chapter 2 that says, "They shall be and shall be lifted up above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it." Jesus says, "I'm going to be lifted up, and I'm going to draw men to myself." The highest of mountains, the one to which all nations flow for salvation, the one who teaches us his ways and invites us to walk in his paths, Isaiah 2, Jesus. The one who is the feast of rich food, the bread of life, John 6. The one who has swallowed up sin, who has swallowed up death forever, 1 Corinthians 15, where, O death, is your victory? The one who, the veil that is spread over the nations, he has lifted and cast it out. 2 Corinthians 3, it's in Christ that the veil is lifted. The one who wipes away all tears, Revelation 21, 4. The one, the reproach of his people he will take away, Romans 15, the reproaches fell on me. Jesus, the mountain above all mountains. The one lifted up above all to conquer death for all. There's no higher mountain. Now, being the people of God, as Christians, it means that we follow the way of Jesus. We follow His way. And the way of Jesus for us in this passage is when pressures of life come, He goes to the mountain to pray. But Jesus is not just, He doesn't just show us the way to live as His people. Jesus is the way. John 14. He's the way. He is the mountain that we run to. When the pressures of life come, when they start to overwhelm us, we may feel like our life is at risk. Emotions. How do we get out of this situation? These are the moments that we turn and we go to the mountain of God, Jesus, where we go and we meet Him there. And this leads us to the second part, that Jesus, the second thing that He did when His life was in the midst of pressure, He broke away, He goes up to the mountain, He prays, and He spends time with God. But then it says He invites people to Him. He calls His disciples to Himself and He invites them. Come. So He first, when pressure hit, He sought relationship with His Father and He invited relationship to Him. Think about what you do when the pressures of life hit. How often is your first response to go to God, to the mountain, to break away and get alone? Maybe yes, some. But even more so, how often do you invite people into those pressures with you? Most of the time, and I'm going to say most, I'm going to speak for myself, when pressure of life hits, going to God is not that knee-jerk reaction, usually. And definitely going to other people is not the knee-jerk reaction. The things that usually I do when pressure comes is to isolate me from God and from others. He went up to the mountain, He called to Him those He desired, and they came to Him, and He appointed 12 so that they may be with Him. And He might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. Jesus shows us a way to live in this world that pushes deeper into a relationship with our Father and deeper into relationship with others that are with Jesus. Right? There's a movement of being with God and inviting others to be with us who are with God. It says, come, follow me. Up the mountain. So what does He do? And what this does for us, I think, it shows us when pressures hit, how do we respond? We go to God and we invite others to join us in that space. But then these two images, I want to bring it home here. These two images, these two different stories paint for us kind of a picture of how we are to come to God. How we come to Jesus. What is the reason? Like what is in this coming to Jesus? Because you have those that heard about all that he was doing. It says they came to him. Verse 8. They came to him. It says they heard all that he was doing. And then in verse 13 it says he called to him those he desired and they came to him. So you have these two different images of coming to Jesus, right? And they're drastically different. The first one we see is that those that were coming to him have no regard for his life or possibly even the lives of others. They were coming to him solely to get something from him. And the second image is the one we see of those who were coming to him because he called them. He invited them. And more specifically, when they got there, he appointed them two things, to be with him and to go out and preach. Identity and purpose. You have the crowd saying, we just want what we want from Jesus. And then you have the disciples that have been called that find identity and purpose in being with Jesus and going out. John 15, verse 5, I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. Our identity and our purpose in life as followers of Jesus is found in Jesus. It's found being with Jesus. It's not found in just going to get what we want from Jesus. John 15, 16, you didn't choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you that you should go and bear fruit. Our identity as followers of Christ is to be a branch abiding in the vine. To be with Jesus. And our identity from that point turns into a purpose, which is fruitfulness. To go out. Purpose, fruitfulness. Identity, abiding. To be with him and to preach the gospel. So true evidence of being a disciple of Jesus is a fruit produced from our lives. And a fruit that only can come from being with him. Coming to Jesus because we've heard of the great things that he can do. And being healed from our diseases and delivered from demonic spirits is not evidence of true discipleship. And I want to clarify here. I'm an advocate for praying for the sick. And I'm an advocate for casting out demons. And I am an advocate for God doing those amazing things in people's lives. But those things are not true evidence of true discipleship. Being healed and delivered is not evidence of discipleship. It's a great thing. True discipleship is being with Jesus and going out to produce fruit, an inward transformation of life. That's true discipleship. Evidence of true disciple is being with them, being made into something new. He appointed them. That word appointed means he made them something else. He appointed them, made them something new, they would bear fruit. The crowds that came to Jesus were good at going after self, things they wanted. They were not good at thinking about others. So to be a Christian is not about coming to Jesus to get something from him. To be a Christian is about being with Jesus and learning of Jesus and from Jesus and living the way of Jesus. It's about being transformed inwardly, a transformed self that's growing in holiness and righteousness and love and compassion and empathy and a fulfilled joy that surpasses circumstances, listening to the voice of the Father and loving others. See, we're on here this to get something from Jesus. See, the beauty in this is that 1 Peter, he gives us everything that we need for life and godliness. 2 Peter. Everything we need for life and godliness is found in him. So just to be with him, you have everything you need. So you get what you need when you're with him. But but he sends you out. We're here because he called us to be with him and to tell others about him. See, I was thinking about this last night, just kind of processing it all, and these two go hand in hand. It's not a both and. I mean, it's not an either or, it's a both and. You don't just be with Jesus and that's your life. And you don't just go, I'm going to go tell people about Jesus all the time. They're inseparable. To truly tell people about who Jesus is, you have to be with Jesus. It's one thing to tell people about what Jesus can do. You can tell people about what Jesus can do all day long. The crowds were doing that. This word was spreading. Hey, Jesus can do, can do, can do. But to truly tell people about who Jesus is and how he lives, you have to be with him. They go hand in hand. So, it's not come and get something from, but it's come and learn how to live. And in your learning how to live, you go out and people see the true beauty of Christ, the Savior, the mountain exalted above all other mountains. Life's full of pressure. My hope and prayer for us this morning is that we would be a people that run to the mountain of God when those pressures come. That we would be a people that run to be with Jesus and learn how to live as his people, to be sent out to proclaim the great news of salvation, of who he is, the Son of God, come to earth, living the perfect life, dying a sinless death, and resurrected to glory on high. That we would proclaim this great news of the kingdom. That we would be a people that say to others, come, let's go up to the mountain. Y'all pray with me?